we are well positioned in this city to be innovative, to be creative, to create new jobs, to attract companies. We got a lot of advantages here, and we just have to keep investing in our strengths, you know, our people, arts and culture, you know, our port, more transit. We have to address our weaknesses, education, transit, public safety concerns, and that's what we're going to do, because we live in a hell of a good city, and I'm going to do my damnedest to make it even better working with the people.
That's Mike McGinn. Getting us perilously close to FCC violations there.
I had no idea.
Mike McGinn is the mayor of Seattle. He announced his reelection. He's here to talk about a number of the issues that are still bedeviling us all while he serves out this term. But let's start a little bit with since you announced, what do you think will be the – and thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
And thank you for sitting through the press conference with the president.
It was interesting to hear what he had to say.
What do you think will be the main points of contention in this election?
Well, I can tell you what I'm working on. And
you're not going to give me the politics of it.
Well, look, elections are about the future. And I really appreciated the clip you played before I came on, because that actually previews some of the things we care about. But we need to keep working every day on jobs and public safety. And we've been doing that. Jobs are up. And in fact, overall, crime is down in the 3 years since I've been taken office, both violent crime and property crimes. But we also have to look to the future, make the right investments. And when I announced, I put an emphasis, we're going to continue our work on education, and we're going to launch a new initiative focused on early learning, which is before kids go to kindergarten. Transit, we're going to keep doing what we're doing in terms of our transit master plan, building First Hill Streetcar. We're planning to extend it, connect the two streetcar lines. We're doing planning with Sound Transit to get a line out to Ballard. And we're going to work with Sound Transit to accelerate the work they're doing, try to bring them to the ballot by 2016. And to the extent that Sound Transit alone can't pay for transit in the city, and it can't, we're going to look to the city of Seattle to complete our transit master plan. So we'll look for multiple funding sources there. And we're going to take this broadband effort we have, get high, ultra-fast broadband into 12 neighborhoods across Seattle. We've got a memorandum of understanding with a group called Gigabit Squared, and that's next-generation infrastructure. And if their business plan works to bring fiber optic cable, you know, to homes and businesses in 12 neighborhoods, we'll be able to expand that citywide.
When you talk about, I'm going to go down this list with you, if I may. Let me start with early learning.
Yeah.
Of course, the state has and the governor made a priority of early learning prenatal to 3. What does Seattle add to that, and how does it pay for it?
Yeah, and that was a good thing for them to do at the state level. So right now, our families and education levy already puts money into early learning. And what we do is we pay for a lot of the same things that the state pays for. In fact, when you see some of the organizations that receive funding, you'll see they get state funding and they get city funding. And the challenge for us now is to make sure that the funding we put in first is generating results. So one of the things that's coming out of the state that we can align ourselves with is starting to measuring how does the money you spend affect the kids' preparation for kindergarten. So there's assessment tools that are out there that can start measuring how kids are doing on a variety of things. And of course, it's pre-K. We're talking about basics.
No, they have to take tests.
No, we're not talking about tests. We're talking about just understanding, are they engaging in a socially appropriately? Are they getting the types of support they need? But there are, in fact, evidence-based assessments that can tell you whether or not the kid is, that young child is moving towards kindergarten readiness. And we actually measure kindergarten readiness when kids get to kindergarten. So we want to make sure our money's making a difference, first of all. And then second of all, what we learn from that, we hope to expand. And I'll give you just a very concrete example. Right now, we spend money on preschool care. Well, what's the quality of the preschool care being given? That's the assessment. But could we start training? Could we set up training for teachers, preschool teachers across the city, whether or not they're funded by us, to bring up the quality? Now, are there things we can do in very early learning, parent has a new child, what types of support can we offer there? And we've already expanded that. So what we're doing is we're going to take an assessment of what we're doing. We're going to spend our money better, and we're going to start expanding it on early learning, because this is a place where the city can really make a difference, where the school district, that's not part of their job, and the state, they're in it, which is great, but we can give a lot of help. Our financial situation is a little stronger than theirs, you may have noticed.
Well, is this new dollars that we're talking about?
At the moment, we're talking about the dollars we have, and as I'm talking about for this year, because we have a budget. But the goal is to expand it and add new dollars over time.
Given what is known about early childhood learning, can you fund more slots for Head Start or whatever we're looking at?
Absolutely. I think right now we fund close to 2,500 children ages 3 to 4 are already reached by the city.
Does that meet the need, or is there more need?
There's more need.
So you could expand it.
Absolutely.
The other thing we know about early learning is that much of it's about prenatal. So can you meet the needs of prenatal care in the city?
We have in fact expanded that care, and one of the challenges is not just in the funding. You can have the funding, but now you actually have to implementation. You have to reach the parents effectively, and that's the next step for that.
Now, the council had some overall criticism about accountability for money in this past year. I forget which of the programs that Sally Clark and the others were focusing on, but I'm sure you remember.
Well, there was a program called CURB, Communities United in Rainier Beach, which is a program that focused on folks that were returning to the community from jail. And the council actually eliminated that program and then, before final adoption, restored it again when they heard from the community. They also funded more youth violence prevention initiative slots, but they had asked some questions about whether it was effective or not. And it's worth noting that in this round of shootings we had in the last year and a half, they weren't kids. And the program is effectively serving the kids that are in it. And in fact, we were going to do an evaluation as well. We always evaluate what we're doing. And that's part of the council's job, too. So there's a little bit of back and forth with the council over what's the best way to evaluate or who should evaluate. But everybody agrees we should evaluate and we should fund programs that are effective and spend our dollars wisely.
Before I go on with that, just one more back to education. Can the city help fund more kindergarten? Because we still have half-day kindergarten in some places. We have full-day in others. Parents have to pay.
You know, that's a good question.
Not part of your proposal here.
I don't have the answer to that. You're going to have to let me go back. One of the things that happens with the Families and Education Levy is because the state wants equality across school districts, we're restricted on what we can spend that's kind of within the school district's primary job responsibility. So that's why the Families and Ed Levy does have a lot of early learning. It has after-school activities, the school-based health centers. It has a lot of things that aren't, that won't violate that state prohibition upon, you know, wealthier places doing better by their kids than less wealthy places. So I'd have to look into whether we could fund more kindergarten or not. I suspect that that falls into the wrong space. We can certainly fund more early learning.
One more political question here. I guess they're all political questions.
They're all political.
But one more. The rap on Mike McGinn was, doesn't play well with others and burned bridges early in his term. What do you see any truth in those criticisms?
Well, let's look at what we've done. Okay, I took a budget.
You, sir, are excellent on framing. You're going to reframe my question.
No, but it's an answer to your question. It's an answer to your question. We started off. I came into office. We were in the red. You know, the budget ending balance was in the red. We'd spent down the rainy day fund by $20 million. We finished in the black every year, and we're rebuilding the rainy day fund with a policy that I proposed and council adopted. We funded the seawall, expanded the library levies. We've doubled the families and ed levy. We got a transit master plan adopted. We see job creation in the city is outpacing the region and the country. Crime is down, both violent crimes and property crimes. We've got a lot of initiatives underway. So I'd say look at what we're doing and look at what we want to do. And I think that answers the question about how well I'm working with others.
I said playing with others. I mean, the criticism was, the governor was mad at Mike McGinn because of criticizing the tunnel, and the city council didn't like the way Mike McGinn pushed through both the tunnel opposition and later the arena deal.
But, you know, they approved the arena, and that was a partnership with King County. That was great. Also a great partnership with King County, so we didn't have to build a new jail. We partnered with King County on 3rd Avenue, along with the Downtown Seattle Association. We have a three-party MOU. Just launched a gun buyback program with King County Executive Constantine. We drove it, and the executive brought in the county, which is fabulous. And I had four former mayors as co-chairs. So we've gotten a lot done by partnering with others. In fact, Dow and I have I've been working with mayors across the state. Dow has been working at mayors in King County, so we can figure out how to get local transportation financing, and we're working together on that as well. Recently met with tribal leaders and mayors to talk about coal trains. How can we work regionally together on that? So I'm not surprised that a few city council members that want my job suggest that I don't work well with others, but I just ask you to look at the results.
What I notice in the Times, you're optimistic about the reelection cycle and where you can raise money. But you're pretty low in money right now. Is it picking up?
Well, you know, I've actually raised a lot more money to date than I raised the first time I ran. And I got a lot more friends now, too, than when I ran before. So it's kind of funny. 4 years ago, they said, how does this neighborhood-based environmentalist who can't raise money, how can he win? And, well, they're still asking the same question, Steve.
Do you have the same kind of support from the activists who doorbelled that you did, or have you lost some of their support?
We have the Sierra Club endorsement, and if you came to the kickoff, you saw we had a lot of folks that are really excited about helping out. So, you know, we'll see. We'll play it out. But I got to say, I feel we start in a good place. But, you know, it's ultimately all about, I'm going to go back to what I was talking about earlier. This is a debate about Seattle's future. And voters don't vote based on who's raised more money or who has more excited volunteers. Voters vote based on who is talking about and working on and getting results on the things that they care about. And that's ultimately what the race is about. And that's what we'll focus on. The fundraising and the volunteers are a way of talking to the public, of getting the message out to the public. They help you get the message out to the public. But ultimately, it's the public's call based on what people stand for, what they've been doing, and what they propose to do. And we've gotten a lot done, and we've got a lot more to get done. And I think we're working on the right things with education, transit, broadband, jobs, and public safety.
What's the actual goal for the gun buyback program?
So our goal was to raise $100,000 because we need to raise private dollars. We can't spend public dollars on that. And we've gone past that goal. We've gotten some great contributors. So it's $100 for, you know, a gun and $200 for an assault weapon or, you know, some type of automatic weapon or semi-automatic weapon. And so you can do the math. $100,000 would get you 1,000 guns or 500, you know, semi-automatics. If the more we raise, the more we can do. So that's a metric type of goal. I think the bigger goal is that it's an expression of our community values about gun violence as well. And we can get these weapons that people don't want out of households where they might be accidentally used, where they might be stolen, where somebody might in a fit of rage, use it when they shouldn't, and that can save lives.
Is it going to bring in anything more? What do your experts tell you? Anything more than, you know, old guns, non-working guns?
Well, you saw what happened in L.A. They got quite a bit there. So we'll find out. And our hope is that this isn't a one-time event, that we'll be able to generate an ongoing program here as well. It's going to take a lot, too, at the other end. So this is taking guns out of circulation that we want to take out of, you know, that would be good to get out of circulation because of the potential for harm they cause. We now need to look at the other end, too, which is how do the guns get into circulation in the first place? And then in the in-between, part of what we're talking about here with the gun buyback is also safety education. The Seattle Police Foundation will be handing out trigger locks. So if you do have a gun, you know, secure it safely. A lot of the weapons used in crimes are stolen from homes in burglaries. So if you have one and, you know, you think it's in a safe place, take another look, because it's very important that it you know, you could be burglarized and be inadvertently and unwittingly contributing to the problem.
Given that and given what the opponents of any new gun legislation are saying, given that the kind of loopholes we're trying to close are they can be difficult to close. You know, if you and I, as we heard on Morning Edition this morning, if you and I exchange a gun, there's not much there to track our guns. There's no registry of ownership. Federal registry. What should happen? What should it look like in this
country?
What
type of policy rules?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the ones that are on the table are an assault weapons ban. It's way too easy to get a concealed weapons permit, and we should be looking at that, making it a little harder. The gun show loophole, I mean, even just the sale of the gun in the first place creates an issue through the gun shows because there's no tracking or background checks whatsoever. So those are three big things, but there are more policy issues we can take on. I think you're right. I don't think we're going to see the whole suite of them pass in Olympia or in the federal government this year. But I think what you need to see is each one of those that you can get enacted. And if folks stay focused and diligent and placing expectations on their elected representatives to make a difference, I think, over the next few sessions, you could start to see us putting together the entire system to really have a much better handle on this.
And again, the NRA and others say, well, that's not going to really make a change. What's your evidence that these will make changes?
You know, the evidence is that other developed countries have much lower rates of gun violence than we do. And even states that have better gun laws have lower rates of violence than those that do not. I mean, the evidence is out there. And you can make the argument, that gun buyback won't make the crime rate drop, or that assault weapons ban, they'll just go find another weapon or they'll use it on the black market. Those are all just excuses. You know, you just have to keep working at it. Here's the example I'll use. At the beginning of this year, first 5 months of this year, we had 23 murders. In the second 7 months, we had 4 murders. Now, we did gun stings. We did gun enforcement with the feds. We got officers out of their cars and on the street. We did violence prevention emphasis patrols in hot spots. We did public education. We had our Seattle Youth Violence Prevention Initiative and their street teams out there. Now, did any one of those things make a difference? And could we even pick out which one of those things made a difference? But collectively, taken together, I think it had an effect. And maybe it can't take credit for all of the reduction, but I'm sure it can take credit for some of that reduction. And I think it's the same. I think we face the same situation with our gun laws. No one program is going to be the one that makes a difference. But collectively, if we can start making progress on it and knock down some of the high-profile issues first, I mean, the assault weapons ban is an example. Like, let's knock down some of the high-profile issues first, and then you start filling in the gaps in your laws over, year after year. And it all happens if you have the culture change and the values from the public that this is what they want. Because what the NRA thrives in is, waiting it out, trying to disrupt any legislative effort, being one-issue advocates with legislators to try to knock them out of office, and the pro-gun control and pro-gun regulation folks, who want to reduce violence, they need to have the same sustained effort that's moving legislators around the state, because the reality is that the politicians don't work, just for interest groups. They work for the public as a whole. So the public as a whole has to find a way to effectively bring pressure on to create change.
Do you see yourself lobbying in Olympia?
Oh, yeah, I do. And I have and I will. I mean, we've worked to just get the right in the city of Seattle to ban guns from parks and community centers. And we don't have that right because the state preempts any local gun regulation.
Do you think there's any truth to what the NRA says about focusing on mental health and focusing on some of the other underlying issues, violence in society?
Yes, I think that the focus on mental the focus on mental health is an important one. And you take a look, for example, we're pretty much we don't take care of our folks with mental illness problems the way we should.
Though I just want to say,
just do not, and we need to, and that's been a long-standing issue. We see it downtown, just walking around. And so that is something, and it's not that every mentally ill person is violent by any means.
No, most are not.
The vast majority are not. But if somebody does have the potential to be violent, and what can we do to make a difference? And you hear stories of families that talk about that, and they felt like they didn't have any avenues there. So of course we can do better. But I just go back to the answer I gave earlier. To say it's not that, it's that, it's going to be a multitude of things that make a difference.
I'm going to hit you with a bunch of things now. The Burke-Gilman missing link and getting an environmental review. Have you talked with have you walked the street with Warren Akravic and the others to figure out how to come up with some kind of compromise?
I personally have not walked the street with Warren Akravic to come up with a compromise. I've certainly spoken with those guys about the issue, and I'm happy to speak with them at any time. I've met with them on the Shoreline Management Act that we're updating here and try to work with them. What we're doing now is we're doing a full EIS because the court said our EIS was not sufficiently broad. And in fact, that's what they've all asked for, is they want a complete, that's what the opponents have asked for, a complete EIS that looks at all alternatives. While we do that, we are going to make safety improvements. And we probably didn't make some safety improvements initially because why go in and make some changes if in a few months or 6 months you're going to make other changes to build the trail? So we're just going to go in there right now and make safety improvements.
Example?
Better striping and better location of where you should be when you're on that stretch of road that has the railroad tracks right in the middle of it. The tires go in, they get stuck, somebody just goes off. It is the most dangerous spot for bicyclists in the city in terms of the number of accidents we've seen. How some of our intersections are designed. So we're not going to build a complete trail from one end to the other, but we are going to make intersection safety improvements that are appropriate that we would make anywhere in the city if we had those types of safety problems. And we'll do that in the interim because we want it to be safer, and then we'll look at the future. Here's the deal with the opponents is bicyclists are going to bike there because it's the shortest place between two points, so we have to make it safe for them. And I think that some of the opponents just don't want the trail there at all. But look at Westlake right now. Westlake, from Fremont to South Lake Union. At the time, opponents of the what was going in said, don't build a bike trail there. We don't want a bike trail here. Well, now you got bikers going through the parking lot, which isn't safe. The bikers will go where there's pavement and it's, they can go from place to place. We can't make believe they're not going to go there and keep them away by not making it safe for them.
You're going to make an announcement about the police commission members in an hour, I believe. Anybody you can tell us who's going to be on that commission?
I am going to try to save it, for later. I got to save some news for all of that. But anything more specific you want to try to dig into?
You're going to have a member of the police guild. It's not going to be the president, is it?
No, it's not going to be Rich O'Neill. It's actually Stuckey. I'm pulling it up right now. I'll share with you the name. I've got my draft release right in front of me here, and it's going to be Kevin Stuckey who will represent the Police Officers Guild.
Now, you recommend them, and then they're approved by the City Council?
Yes.
And what's the expectation for these people's duties?
We're really asking them to do a lot, and this is something, by the way, that I fought for in the negotiations with the Department of Justice, because I didn't think, as I was sitting at the table working on that negotiation, that either the DOJ or I had all the answers, that we really have to actively engage the community, and that's particularly on some of the toughest problems, things that, frankly, DOJ had to agree that they didn't have a policy prescription that would necessarily work. So we're going to ask them, we're going to use the Community Police Commission as a forum for looking at the policy changes that are called for in the agreement with DOJ. They'll have an opportunity to give input on that. But on any issue that affects community trust, bias in policing, how we use force, we're going to ask them to actively engage. And this is not something that is tied to, in my opinion, this is not something that's simply tied to the DOJ. This is, I hope, an ongoing way for us to have an open and honest dialogue about the challenges of policing, where we got the police and the community at the table together, having an open conversation about what do we need to do differently.
So, Mayor McGinn, just real quickly, what were the criteria by which you chose these people? What were you looking for?
There was some criteria in the ordinance, and if I blow it, I may not get it right. We wanted to have representation from different perspectives. So we've got some of the most significant critics of the police department here. as well as you, as we've mentioned, someone from the Police Guild and from the Police Management Association. We also wanted a diverse representation, but more than that, for the people on it, we wanted them to have to enter this with a problem solving attitude. This is not a place to go, grind your, to advocate for whatever your particular policy prescription is, or to rehash old battles. This is to go in, listen to what the other side's concerns are, and help this city build a great police force and build that trust between the police and the community by being open-minded and at the same time, really passionate about what's important.
All right, sir. We had half our time, and there's still more to talk about, so perhaps we'll do it again.
I enjoy coming down. I thought we actually packed in a fair bit for our short period of time.
South Lake Union and the seawall and global climate change, but we'll get there next time.
Yeah, kudos. I want to give a shout out to Council Member Mike O'Brien. Our Green Ribbon Commission has come up with recommendations, and Mike O'Brien's leading public input on what plan the council should adopt. Listeners should get engaged, because what the council adopts, I'm going to do.
Mike McGinn is the mayor of Seattle. Thank you, sir. This is Weekday. Stay with us.